Thanks very much, Graham, and I would like also to begin by acknowledging that we are on the traditional land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and to pay my respects to the elders past and present. And I think as we enter on this discussion today about the connection between human rights, homelessness and housing, I think this acknowledgement is particularly important. And I should also mention that in my presentation today, the views that I'll be expressing are my own views and not necessarily the official policy of the Human Rights and Equal Opportunities Commission. So before the 2000 federal election, I had the opportunity to be involved in a quite vibrant discussion with a former senior federal minister about the importance of potentially improving the human rights protections in Australia. And at one point in the discussion, the senior minister made the point that, look, in my electorate, people just don't come to me talking about human rights. They come to me talking about housing. Now, the connection between the two, human rights and housing, was, at least not to him, eminently apparent. And this questioning of the relevance of human rights to housing and homelessness is probably also not necessarily confined to this senior minister. I think it's also possible that the new Rudd Labor government does not necessarily make a clear connection between the new discussion about the need for better human rights protections in Australia and the separate policy commitments that have been announced in the area both of affordable housing and homelessness. And I don't think that this not necessarily making a strong connection between human rights and housing is confined to the political arena. I was recently had the opportunity to visit South Australia to meet up with a fantastic group of women from the Women's Housing Caucus there, and was talking with them about many of the experiences they have of trying to support women and children to secure affordable housing and crisis accommodation in that state. And when I had a discussion with them about potentially being interested in getting involved in the discussion about better protections for human rights laws in Australia, they quite rightly said to me, well, look, we've got to get our priorities here about where we put our time. And they had a good point. Busy people make good decisions about where to put their energies based on their assessment of what they're likely to get out of it. And so I think that's the sort of discussion that I'd be keen for us to have today. And as I shared with them some of the ideas of how human rights laws have been used in other countries with this fantastic group of women, I must say their interest was sparked a little more about the potential to get involved in this national debate. So in the short time that I have, I hope to also spark a bit of interest here. Clearly we have some interest because it's a fantastic collection of people that have come today. And what I want to do is share with you just a couple of examples of where in other countries where there are better human rights protections already in place at the national level, that those laws have been used to indeed make a real difference to the experiences of people on the ground in their daily lives. And the couple of stories that I want to share with you reflect some real realities of the experiences of people in Australia today. The first I want to share with you is about the treatment of people who do spend their lives living in public space. And the second story I want to share with you is about the experience of people facing eviction from private rental properties. Again, a very, very common occurrence in people's daily lives, and increasingly so here in Australia. By telling these stories, I do hope to make the case that if we believe in this wealthy country of ours that we should have a secure, affordable and appropriate place to live, then human rights does have a lot to do with it. And I'm going to move to my first PowerPoint. That was the title of the speech. Okay. All right. So just to talk about, first of all, the treatment of people living in public places. As we sit here today, many of you will know that every jurisdiction in Australia has in place laws that will criminalise people because of their homelessness condition. And the particular example I often give is the situation in Darwin, where we still have a law in place that makes it an offence for anybody to camp in a public place or as an adult to sleep in public between sunset and sunrise. Yet we also know that Darwin has the highest rates of homelessness of any capital city in Australia. And on my recent trip, Graham is right, I have been on tour with Liz Broderick, the Sex Discrimination Commissioner. We had the opportunity when we were back in Darwin a couple of weeks ago to catch up with an extended Indigenous family group who are living tucked up in the bushes just off the beaches of Darwin. And they're tucked up seriously out of sight. And the reason that they're tucked up there is because if they are living in more visible places, they will be subjected to daily patrols from either policing or council officers who will move them on. And one of the women, when we sat down to talk with her on this morning, said that early in the morning, she'd been with other family who were up further down the beach, slightly more visible, where they were had a fire going and they were cooking some turtle on that fire. And the police came along, sure enough, said, sorry, you have to move on. And the question is, move on to where? We know that in Darwin there is an absolute crisis of affordable, low-cost housing options for people. And the rough estimates are there's between 500 to 1,000 people at any given time who will be living homeless in that city. So what has human rights law got to do with this? Okay. So for this example, I want to highlight the relevance of the human right to freedom from cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment and or punishment. This is the human right that is enshrined in Article 7 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which is an international treaty to which Australia is currently a party. However, as probably many of you know, we do not currently have a domestic national law that protects this particular human right within the Australian legal system. There has been some recent developments. Now in Victoria, there is a Charter of Rights and Responsibilities, and this particular human right is now contained in Section 10 of that piece of legislation. And similarly in the Australian Capital Territory, with their new Human Rights Act, Section 10 also contains this human right. So this is one to watch. And I want to share with you a story from the United States where this human right, which in that context is contained in the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, has been used to challenge the enforcement of public space laws like the one I've described in Darwin when used against people who are homeless. So in the city of Los Angeles, on Skid Row, there is the highest concentration of homeless people across America. On any given night, there is, again, an estimate of at least between 11 to 15,000 people who are homeless. And when all those people are able to access all of the emergency or crisis accommodation in that area, there will be at least 1,000 people who simply do not have anywhere to go. Now, the city of Los Angeles has a law, an anti-sleeping law in place in that jurisdiction as well. The law has been around for a long time, but in recent years, whereas in the past the police had basically a tolerance approach that where they knew somebody was homeless, they wouldn't enforce the law against them. In more recent times, they've adopted a zero tolerance approach to the enforcement of this bylaw, essentially to move homeless people out of the city. And in this situation, 6 homeless people brought a case to the courts in the United States relying on the Eighth Amendment. Edward Jones and his wife were 2 of the appellants. So his wife had severe both physical and mental disabilities. They were on a Social Security income, but even with that income in place, they could only afford to purchase 2 weeks out of every month of the crisis accommodation that was available in that city. So they absolutely had no choice but to live on the streets for 2 weeks out of in any given month. And along with the 4 other applicants, they were picked up by the LAPD and they were charged under the anti-sleeping bylaw and brought before the court. The applicants in this case made the argument that to enforce an anti-sleeping law against somebody who is homeless is to effectively criminalise their status as a homeless person. Their argument was that the act of sleeping was involuntary for any homeless person, and accordingly it met the test under the United States Constitution of what constitutes, in that context, cruel and unusual punishment. And the court accepted that argument. They didn't say that an anti-sleeping law was on its face unconstitutional. They accepted that it would be appropriate in certain circumstances to enforce that law against people. But the court said that where, and I'll quote, as long as there is a greater number of homeless individuals in Los Angeles than the number of available beds in the city, the government may not enforce the law against homeless individuals for involuntary sitting, lying or sleeping in public. And the outcome of that case was that the court referred the case for an injunction to be put in place to prevent that anti-sleeping law from being enforced against people during the night until available accommodation had been made to ensure that people were not forced to sleep on the streets in public. So I think you can see the potential to use this particular human right to challenge the kind of enforcing of anti-sleeping laws, such as the one that exists in Darwin, where you can demonstrate that people do not have a choice but to live in public places. So that's what human rights has got to do with that particular story. The next story that I want to lay out for you is the situation of private landlord evictions. As you probably know, in most states and territories, except Tasmania, I think, under the residential tenancy laws, it's possible for a landlord to issue a notice against a private tenant, and even if they've been complying with all their obligations under the tenancy agreement, subject to being given a certain period of notice, and in New South Wales that's currently, I think, 60 days, the landlord is able to seek an eviction order against that tenant. It happens every day. Another, for example, in New South Wales, the tribunal that will deal with that application for an eviction order, if the tenant refuses to leave during that time, the tribunal is under an obligation to take into account all of the relevant circumstances, but in practice, most often, eviction order will be made. I think according to the Tenants Union of New South Wales, maybe in any given year, there may be three or four occasions in which the tribunal will refuse to grant an eviction order, particularly against a private landlord. And I think there's a general acceptance that it's not the obligation of a private landlord to address the fact that for some people, when they face eviction, they will be made homeless. So, again, what has human rights law got to offer to this particular situation? Because I think that there are probably people in this room right now who have been involved in that terrible scenario where you know somebody is going to the tribunal, you know that they're going to get an eviction order made against them, and you also know that you do not currently have anything to offer them in terms of alternative housing. And I know that there are people who probably spend nights awake trying to think of a solution to this family that's about to go on the streets. So in this example, I want to focus on the human right to adequate housing. Now, the human right to adequate housing is contained in the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights in Article 11.1. And through the interpretation of relevant international committees about what this right means, it essentially places an obligation on the government to take reasonable steps to progressively realise the obligation to provide adequate housing for the people in its country. And as part of that obligation, it means that the government is required to put in place measures to prevent what's called retrogressive steps being taken, in other words, to worsen a person's housing condition. So your obligation is to progressively try and make things better and also to not allow things to be made worse for people. as you probably know, this human right is not currently implemented in any shape or form in national legislation. And in the various inquiries that have been conducted around the country into investigating human rights laws at the state level, and at the moment that's Tasmania, Western Australia, Victoria and the ACT, whilst three out of the four of those committees recommended that this human right, amongst others, under the Economic, Social and Cultural Rights Convention, should be incorporated into the state-based human rights laws, no government has as yet agreed to that reform. So at the moment we don't have this in our current legislation. So I want to tell you a story from South Africa where they do have this in their constitution to show how our experience of how private landlord evictions occur might become more humane if we did have this human rights law in place in our country. So in South Africa, Section 26 of the Constitution puts in place a similar obligation on the government to take reasonable steps to progressively realise the obligation to provide adequate housing. And so in addition to that constitutional provision, in order to give effect to that, the South African government passed two pieces of legislation, the Housing Act, which was to provide greater detail about the obligations on government authorities to ensure that they were progressively going forward in improving access to adequate housing. And secondly, a piece of legislation called the Prevention of Illegal Evictions and Unlawful Occupiers Act, which is to regulate the way in which evictions are to occur to ensure that they comply with the constitutional obligations in relation to forced evictions as part of this right to adequate housing. So under the eviction law that's been passed, which I'll call for easy hand PIE, Prevention of Illegal Evictions Act, there's an obligation on the court in dealing with any application for an eviction order is required to take a range of factors into account and to only make an eviction order if it's considered to be just and equitable in the circumstances of the case. And if somebody has been in occupancy for more than 6 months, then the court is required to take into account and balance the fact that the person has no alternative accommodation available if they are to be evicted. So in October of last year, the South African High Court heard this case of Lingwood. This case involved a situation in the city of Johannesburg. I'm not sure whether you've been there, but the housing crisis is pretty intense there. And there's been a big push to develop the city, to sort of do urban renewal in that place. So this private developer had bought a building in which there were 18 adults and 9 children who'd been occupying those premises as private tenants for up to 15 years. The families were, it was accepted that they were basically living a subsistence lifestyle, that other than being able to provide a bit of rent to cover to ensure that their tenancy was in place, they were extremely poor. And it was accepted that if they were to be evicted, there would be absolutely nowhere else for them to go. Now, the importance of this case is that the court said we're not prepared to consider whether or not to make this eviction order until the city of Johannesburg is brought to this court. The city of Johannesburg, because of the constitution, has an obligation to put in place measures to ensure that people who are facing eviction will not be forced into homelessness. And we want the government here, and we want to hear from you, and we want the potential to make orders against you as well in the process of this eviction. And so you can see potentially how this kind of human right could be brought to bear on increasing some of the coordination of services in the process of evictions, so that, for example, where somebody is demonstrated to be likely to face a homeless when they're coming before an eviction tribunal, there is the option for the government services to be brought before the tribunal and for there potentially to be orders made about what should be done so that people such as those working in the community sector, are not facing some of those terrible situations where you know that when that eviction order will be made that day, that family will be homeless. So there's a couple of examples that I hope have sparked your interest about some of the potential here. And I hope that these two stories help to demonstrate how human rights laws could take us further down the path in terms of ensuring that people who are homeless or facing evictions are treated with greater dignity and respect. Australia is a wealthy country, and with the policy commitments from the new federal government showing new promise, I would strongly encourage us all to make the connections between human rights laws and our concerns about housing and homelessness. I think we have much to gain by learning from the experiences of other countries if we are looking to build the kind of society that I think we're all here to achieve. One founded on human rights for everyone, every day, everywhere. That's actually the new Heriot logo, so there you go. That's it, thanks.